ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Warwick's Weekly Wrap.
Joining us for Look This Week at the Week in Sport, Warwick Hadfield. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Good evening to you too, Philip. It's great to be back. I think I've got rid of that awful cough.
Yeah, excellent. Good to hear. Hey, well, of course, all eyes on Thursday night cricket. Okay. It's the pink ball game, so day nice. The English team maybe not as experienced at this as the Australians? What do you think?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, because England has those extensive twilights, pink ball cricket, night cricket's rendered surplus to requirements there. When they come out here, they discover that between Cricket Australia and the television companies, it's a required thing. You know, Joe Root asked the other day, why do we need it? Well, Cricket Australia under James Sutherland pushed it through like a bulldozer because, you know, that's why they love the Perth test, because it starts so late on goes into high rank ratings time on the Eastern Seaboard. And they thought they'd do it artificially with a pink ball. And look, it's here. And one thing I can't agree with, though, you have to be realistic sometimes, and cricket always changes and moves on. They didn't have a middle stump when they started out all those hundreds of years ago. But look, you've got the point where why are they going to play the sesquicentenary test at the MCG in March at night? Mm. That's just silly beyond all measures, but that's what they're planning to do at the moment. And if I was the English, I'd be saying no way. It was played in 1877 under the Melbourne Sun, and it should be played that way again. An interesting little side bit. I've had a couple of Australian cricketers, Test cricketers, sidle up to me and say, "Is it true?" And I spoke to a Cricket Australia chairman the other day. He wasn't sure. Is it true that the only players they're going to invite to the sesquicentenary test are those who took part in the centenary test in 1977. Now, if you're old enough to remember that match organised by the wonderful Hans Ebeling, every living Ashes Test cricketer was brought to Melbourne for that day. Names we no longer hear. TAA, I think they were flown in on. And of course, the Great Australian Airline flew them in from England as well. So it was a wonderful gathering of eagles. You know, Percy Fender in his wheelchair and all that sort of thing. But at the moment, it seems the only cricketers being invited to attend are those who partook in 1977. And of course, people like Tony Gregg, no longer with David Hooks, no longer with us. So I don't know. Cricket Australia apparently is not as flush with funds. That's another reason for night cricket, as it has been in the past. They've been tallying up some losses. So just one to watch. I think you might see some cricketers, if it doesn't change, come out and have a big old crack at Cricket Australia over this one.
Let's
getting back to what's more immediate. Usman Khawaja is his position at the top of the batting order. You know, look, populism is...
I mean, he's in the side.
He's in the squad.
It's an unchanged squad, yeah. But he's not going to open, is he?
Well, I don't know. Populism is very, very much the thing, favour of the moment. And all the straw polls I've been holding, you know, on Saturday down at the cricket club or anywhere I go, who should open the batting? And everyone says Travis Head. And, you know, you can see a very, very valid, number of valid reasons for that. Number one, he scored that century in Perth. Number two, Usman Khawaja has form even before this test, and because we know about the vicissitudes with his back and everything that went wrong there. But even before that, this match, he was hardly making runs like Manus Labuschagne has been. And you could do all sorts of wonderful permutations if you open with Travis Head. You could drop Nathan Lyon and use Bo Webster as your spinner and have an extra fast bowler, and bat all the way, you know, almost bat down to 11. So there's plenty of things there. But I just sense this is not an Australian side that rushes into things. And against that, there is that old axiom: you don't change winning sides either. So that'll be there. It'll, you know, all sorts of things. What's George Bailey keep saying? We need to get more information.
England's going to go. They'll do better this time, don't you think?
Well, they have to. I mean, the fact that Ben Stokes has been forced to come out and hold a media conference to deny the team is arrogant. suggests that they have gone backwards so far from a public relations point of view in their own country.
Hmm.
I mean, Douglas Jardine and Ray Illingworth and those fellows, in the past, they couldn't give two hoots about what Australians thought of them. But the fact that the anger almost back in England that Stokes has had to come out and say, look, we might have been rotten, we might have been rubbish, but we're not arrogant.
Mm.
And so they really do need to perform for their own audience. It's really an interesting thing in England. It's still very much a game, you know, there was that big shift. It started out as an Arcadian game, and then the Toffs took over control, and it became what they call public schools there. Mm. It's what we call private schools, and it's still with that. And there's also an elitism about the fact that it's not broadcast on free-to-air television in England as well. So it's always fighting against a tide at the moment in England, and the last thing you need is not just an unpopular an underperforming team, but an unpopular one with all these claims of arrogance. And has Piers Morgan gone quiet, or is he on sabbatical or something? I haven't seen him claiming that this is the worst Australian team since Charles Bannerman, or making any comments like that in recent times. I think 2 days in Perth quieted him down quite a lot. But, yeah, what to do with Khawaja? Look, that's something that George Bailey and Andrew Ronnie McDonald will be mulling over. My view is, and I made this last week and I maintain it now, that they'd be better off with Head. They could use Joe Inglis as his stead too at number five, and that they would lose nothing there. Joe Inglis is scoring test centuries every time he gets picked for Australia, and he's always in consistent form in the Sheffield Shield.
If Khawaja is named in the lineup, it'll be make or break for him, though, won't it? He has to make runs.
Well, there's been this, I don't know whether it's official or unofficial, but there's been this thing that he would have a farewell test in the in the pink test, where they don't use a pink ball at the SCG. But I don't know that you can,
it's not his call, is it?
he got a rip snorter of a ball in Perth. There's no doubt about that. It climbed off the pitch, and nearly, if he hadn't got a glove to it or a bat to it, it would have taken his head off. So there you go. It's a very difficult situation for him and for Cricket Australia, but I think they have to make that hard decision. With Khawaja, it would be a brave decision, as Sir Humphrey would say, but I think it would be a very, very good one. But against that, there is this conservatism, as we saw when they told the world, and all the backgrounding was going on, that Pat Cummins was going to be picked for this. Then when the team was announced last Friday, he wasn't there, so they err on the side of caution, this lot. And we're still one of the best test cricket teams in the world, so they seem to be doing something right, so we have to give them credit for that.
True enough. All right, look, the golf, the Australian Open, of course, on this weekend at Royal Melbourne, after an interesting PGA tournament in Brisbane at the Royal Queensland, when this Spanish young fellow who probably no one had ever heard of. That's because he's a Catalan. He was a champion junior golfer. Went to Arizona University in the US as a college golfer.
Yeah.
And he got recruited to Liv, which is probably why we haven't heard of him, because he's been playing. He's been playing with Liv, David Puge. Anyway, he wins. I'll tell you what, though, Cameron Smith didn't even make the cut.
It's amazing.
It's not very good, is it?
I mean, how much did he get? 140 million?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, I suppose,
it's been disastrous for his golf, though.
Yeah, but it's been wonderful for the rest of his life, isn't it?
Sure.
I suppose, I don't really know the man at all to know whether he's able to just sit back and say, well, I'm set up for the rest of my days and I'll just go out and enjoy golf, and if I don't make the cut, I don't make it. But I would assume someone who's won a major title would have an element of competitiveness in him that makes this quite galling. But anyway, it's back at Royal Melbourne, and everyone's saying this is the greatest thing since bread came sliced.
Yeah.
One of the great sand belts.
It's the great course of Australia, Royal Melbourne, composite course.
Why is it so long since it's been used? Since the 1990s? I mean, doesn't Golf Australia know how to market, or is there just something? Do they have to share it around the Australian and all the other courses?
It's the best course in Australia when it's in good nick, and that is a composite course, and it's a mighty thing. So The weather's not been too good, though, so let's hope it dries out for the weekend.
The weather here in Victoria, it was the first day of December, and we had the fire on inside. and look, cricket has been, last Saturday's cricket, the covers are on as often as are off, almost all over Victoria. It's been amazing. It's just this lingering, well, you wouldn't even call it spring. It's an Indian winter almost. You know? I went out to walk the dogs yesterday, and I had to come home. I got caught in a freshet, and it was so cold. I had to come back and get a beanie to put on.
Oh dear. Anyway, look, yes, no, good action. And I think a lot of people would be going to see Rory McIlroy, of course.
Well, apparently they're swinging off the trees at Royal Melbourne.
Yeah.
Roger Vaughan from AAP has just written a piece that says that you know, people were climbing trees to get a look at him when he was having his first look at the course. And, you know, everyone's saying putting it back at Royal Melbourne is helping restore the Australian Open to its special place in world golf, which I hope is the case.
Yeah, you know.
We've had to bribe people in the past to get them here. Do you remember when Tiger Woods came and his private jet flew into Melbourne and it was shadowed by helicopters as if he was a US president or royalty? And
More important than that. Come on.
Well, but it wasn't all that much later that it all went pear-shaped for Tiger.
It did. It went pear-shaped when he was in Australia. That's right. The whole thing collapsed. Anyway, it'll be a good weekend of golf. Now, what else is happening? Oh, there's been drama in Formula One.
Well, there's always drama in Formula
there
One.
There is always drama. You wonder whether it's engineered sometimes. But anyway, it's all coming down to the final race of the season. Funny.
Well, it is, but I don't believe that this could be formulaic, to coin a phrase. But what about McLaren? Now, they cost their two drivers points in Las Vegas with
the car was too low. Yeah.
The car was too low. And then they botched this thing in Qatar with not pitting. Now, you know, it all gets technical.
Do you understand the strategy? I didn't understand that.
Well, you have to pit twice. Yeah. Formula One rules are. And when the safety car was out, it became a free hit. That's what they're calling it, a free pit. So everybody else did it except the two McLaren cars. So they then had to do two pit stops later in the race, while everyone else, including Max Verstappen, only had to do one. And that was enough for him to get in the lead. And he will tell you that if he was driving a McLaren, he would be the world champion already. He believes they have the fastest cars. And when your opponent in this high-octane, highly competitive world says something like that, you know that to be true. And it was true, and it is true, they have the fastest cars, but they make these horrible mistakes. I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were saying that McLaren were favouring Norris. If you look at the last two races, they're not favouring either of their drivers.
Well, but what was the idea, though? I mean, given they were watching everyone pit, why didn't they just do it? Was the idea hanging?
But they were in
what
front.
What did they think?
They were in front, so they didn't know what the cars behind them were going to do. So they made a decision not to pit.
Yeah, but they can see. They're all watching it on telly. I mean, they can say, hang on, what's going on here? Radio our drivers go in.
Well, it was too late by the time they worked it all out. And look, Andrea Stella, who's the manager, has come out and said sorry. You know, so the second Grand Prix race in a row, he's had to say sorry. So you'd have to wonder about the management of the McLaren team. Their engineers have given them these two very, very fast cars, and they have two blokes who can actually drive them. And they've won the Constructors' Championship ages ago, and the Drivers' Championship has been theirs to lose. And, boy, if Max Verstappen wins in Abu Dhabi, they'll lose it.
Yeah. Piastri can theoretically win, but he's 16 points behind. You get 25 points for a win. So he'd have to basically win or come second, and Norris would have to be way back in the pack.
You'd almost want him to have a DNF.
That's probably unlikely. I mean, look, I know anything can happen in this sport because you could come off at the first corner and it's all over. But you'd have to say Piastri's really not likely at this point, wouldn't you?
Well, if he'd got the 25 points for a win, as he should have done in Qatar, it would be a lot better. But yeah, look, it's going to be hard. He needs Max Verstappen to crash into Lando Norris.
He needs Verstappen to crash into Norris. That's it.
Yeah,
and that's right. And then he needs to come first or second, and then be fine. Then he's home and hosed. Yeah. Anyway, it's early Monday morning.
Monday morning Australian time. Yeah. Now we're going to talk about what's happening in Tasmania.
What is happening? What is happening in Tasmania? Well, we're talking about the Tasmanian footy team in the stadium here. Yes.
Yeah. Well, look. Once upon a time, a dam divided Tasmania, and then there was a pulp mill. And here we are in 2025, and guess what it is? A football stadium dividing the state right down the middle again. I've had friends who've fallen out over this, and there are friends with whom I would not raise, you know, people who in support of and people against who I wouldn't raise the subject with in case they wanted to know which side I was on. And it's just terrible. And I think the AFL ought to be ashamed of itself for causing this. But of course, AFL and shame, you'd never hear in the same sentence if it was in, Hasno was in there as well. But it's just shocking what's happening down there in terms of these demonstrations. Some people for it, some people against it. It's just terrible that this state, which is, did you see the credit rating that came out last week? It's already been downgraded.
I know.
And they're going to go and borrow it. Look, Greg Barnes, who is a lawyer and who's been vocally against it, he says the AFL's bluff, no stadium, no team, he said that should be called. He believes that having gone as far as they've got, setting up all those members and so on, that he reckons the AFL would blink. But Greg is a human rights lawyer, and I don't think he realises that human rights isn't always high on the agenda at the AFL. So, what's going to happen? The upper house has to vote. It could vote this week, but if they're not sure, it's said that the government will keep putting it off until they know they're going to get the vote they want. And the government, of course, with the help of the opposition, the main opposition wants this. So, anyway,
there is a real question whether they can afford it. There really is.
Well, they really can't. I mean, you grew up there. I lived there for a decade, and it's not the wealthiest state by a long stretch of the imagination. And there are an awful lot of people living on the breadline and below in the northern suburbs of Hobart, in some suburbs of Launceston, and up on the west coast as well. And you know, those monies would be better spent helping those people.
You would think so. Anyway, we might find out this week, but I think you're right. The government is not going to put a vote unless they think they're going to win it.
That's for sure.
Now, rugby codes. R360 has been put off for two years.
For 2 years, yeah. And the big question is, where does that leave Pappenhuyzen and Zach Lomax, the two rugby league players who, it was thought, had taken leave from their various clubs so they could join it. They make handy wallabies. But they wouldn't have the bargaining chip, when the rugby union sort of goes over and pinches someone from rugby league, you know, they offer them millions of dollars. But so it'll be interesting to see where these two end up. And there's this is just one you shake your head at. They're fighting among themselves in rugby league at West Tigers again. Just extraordinary. This amalgamation of the old Western Suburbs and the old Balmain, it was forced on both clubs by about 30, 25 years ago. Economic rationalists somehow got in control of rugby league, and they've absolutely smashed the game to bits. They kicked out North Sydney, they created this, and they would have kicked out South Sydney, another foundation club, if they had their way. Thankfully, we're getting North Sydney back in a sort of a different form in Perth, which is one admission that it was a terrible thing to kick out a foundation club all those years ago. But this Balmain thing is just a mess. You'd have to say those people back then, to quote Oscar Wilde, they knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. And yesterday, or early this week, there's this group called the Barnes Holman Group, who seem to always be fighting among themselves, who run West Tigers. They're having another infight.
They don't like the colour of the jumper now.
No, it's crazy, crazy, crazy. And they've sacked four independent directors who were supposed to show that all the bad old days of fighting had gone in the past. And that hasn't happened. Barry O'Farrell has described it on ABC local radio in Sydney. He described what has happened as a brain fart.
there you are.
There you go. Our politicians are such wonderfully eloquent human beings, aren't they?
Watch this space. All right, Warwick, always great to talk. Let's chat next week.
Well, can we just talk about that Spanish golfer? I just want to tell this story. How did you pronounce his name? Puig?
No, I think it's Puig. Puig.
Puig? Puig? Yeah. Well, back in the day, and you won't remember this, but I do, the French had a Catalan fullback by the name of Robert Puig, who changed his name to Puig Aubert. And he is still believed to be the greatest French rugby league player ever. But at fullback, wearing the number one jumper, he used to smoke on the field. And if he would not tackle. His view of the whole game was, if the other 12 have missed it, why should I have to do it as tackle them as well? So if you can remember Prig or Bear, you're as old as me. And what a wonderful character he was. I'm sure our successful golfer neither smoked or did those other things.
Mm. Proud Catlin. All right. Okay, Warwick, terrific to talk. Talk to you next week.
Good on you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.